and all will be forgiven. I stabbed Dakan into his chest. Bones broke with a dry crunch like twigs. The Mavir shrieked and flailed, fire raging around him. I thrust the spear deeper, carving through him. Die, worm! He howled, trying to form a prayer. I heaved the spear and drove him in an arc over my head into the ground. His robes tore, flames spiraling out, revealing the burned, desiccated husk that was his body. I yanked Dakan free, reversed it, and drove the butt of the spear into the priest's skull. Bone crunched. I hammered his ugly face again and again, pounding his skull with the butt of the spear into dust. Die, and tell your god I sent you to the afterlife! The flames wailed like a living creature. The Mavir jerked and exploded. Soot drifted through the air. I took a deep breath and looked up. Derek rose from the ground. Next to him, Zahar, still prone, stared at me with eyes as big as saucers. In the distance, all the way across the road, Tulip pinched some grass off the ground and chewed, unconcerned, while the Buddha girl lay limp across her saddle. Derek's eyes went gold.
Is there something you need to tell me?
We need to go to the pierogi stand, right now. He stared at me. We need to get there before they do.
Zahar, Derek said, take the girl to the pack safe house. There is one on Durham Street. Leave her there. If they try to detain you, use my old name. Pull everyone in. Where is this pierogi stand?
On the corner of 15th and Peachtree, by my house.
Bring everyone there. Yes, Alpha.
Zahar took off at a run, swept the girl into his arms, and dashed up the street. Derek turned to me.
Get on your horse. You will explain this to me on the way. All of it.
16. The pierogi stall was on fire. I swung off Tulip's back and sprinted to it. Pieces of the stall smoldered, sending greasy smoke into the air. I tried to peer inside the gutted structure. Behind me, Derek inhaled. I had told him the bare minimum about Moloch. Mentioning Kate would have given me away, so I explained that a person close to me was Moloch's target, and that he and I had a score to settle. I also told him that Moloch wanted the divine beast's heart so he could glimpse the future. I wasn't sure if he bought it, but for now it would have to do.
I don't smell any burned corpses, Derek said. Did they take the owner hostage?
It's not their style. They must have missed him and burned the stall to make sure I miss him too. Come to think of it, it was a weird location for the stall. Too close to Unicorn Lane. The area was poor, the foot traffic light. I had never seen any other customers there. I was keeping them afloat all by my lonesome. Derek stopped and inhaled. He was staring at the raggedy blanket where my friend the beggar spent his days. Derek shook his head and inhaled again. What is it?
There is no fucking way.
What does that mean? For a second, his flat expression slipped.
I smell a dead man.
I don't see a corpse.
I saw the corpse. I saw it 8 years ago. I carried his coffin at his funeral.
The fractured pieces in front of me snapped together. A female broker who disappears into thin air and whom nobody can find. A pierogi stall on the edge of Unicorn Lane that isn't doing any business except collecting the phone numbers for the broker. The beggar who watches it. I blinked. The magic trails blossomed in front of me. The filthy blanket where the beggar had sat turned into a dazzling mix of clear human blue and silver shot through with gold. Son of a bitch. Can you track him? Derek started forward.
Oh, yes. And when I get my hands on him, he'll wish he fucking stayed dead.
We jogged down Peachtree Circle, Tulip gleefully keeping pace with us. Did other shapeshifters know him?
Everyone knew him, Derek growled.
Ascanio Ferrara had to have walked by his blanket when he came to see me.
His blanket is soaked in piss. When you get close, all you can smell is ammonia and mothballs. Most people will take a whiff and give him all the space he needs.
We rounded a collapsed building and emerged onto my street. My house was 100 yards ahead.
He went into Unicorn Lane, Derek growled.
I slipped back into the sensate vision. The beggar's trail was a mere wisp, dissipating with every second. Beyond it, Unicorn Lane was a psychedelic rainbow soup of magic, clashing, mixing, boiling. Derek stopped.
I stopped too.
Ahead of us, Ascanio walked out from behind my house and gave us a friendly wave. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Wait here, Derek said. I'll handle this.
Will you?
Ascanio asked.
Is that a fact?
He strolled toward us, leisurely, one foot in front of the other. You could almost see the hyena in his movement. Behind him, shapeshifters stepped into the open. From behind my house, from the abandoned building across the street on our right, from the fallen ruin on our left. 9 Buddhas total, with Ascanio. Crap.
Mr. Gaunt and I are old friends, Ascanio purred.
You don't have friends, Ascanio, Derek said. You have people who are useful to you and people who are not.
Aw, you're trying to hurt my feelings.
A ruby light rolled over Ascanio's irises.
And I was so looking forward to our reunion.
Derek raised his hand and flicked his fingers. 5 shapeshifters materialized from the buildings on the right, 3 men and 2 women. Wolves, all of them, except Zahar, who perched on the heap of rubble directly behind us. Our eyes met, and he winked at me. With Derek, that made 6 against Ascanio's 9.
You're outnumbered, Derek said.
Ascanio laughed.
You haven't changed.
The 2 groups fanned out behind their leaders, each shapeshifter sizing up their opponents and picking out targets. This was now bigger than the 2 of them. If they fought, it would be a bloodbath.
Walk away, both of you, I said. This accomplishes nothing. What are you hoping to win?
This isn't about winning, Ascanio said.
His face took on a savage edge. A deranged light played in his eyes, the Buddha crazy spilling out.
You should have stayed gone.
Derek looked impassive, as if he were attending a boring lecture and couldn't wait for it to be over. No intelligent life on either side. I tried again.
You do this, and the pack goes to war.
Jerry, Ascanio said, remove the knight and keep her safe.
A larger female Buddha on the right stepped toward me.
Right. Cherry, I am a knight of the order. Put your hands on me and you'll be hauling rocks for weeks.
Cherry halted, unsure. The pack was a big believer in redemption through hard labor. I turned to Ascanio. If you give them an illegal order, they will still be punished. Your authority won't shield them. Is that the kind of beta you are?
This doesn't concern you, Ascanio snapped. Stay out of pack business, human.
The front door of my house burst open, and Namtor stormed out in all his tunic and sandals glory.
What is the meaning of this?
Behind him, Martin snuck out onto the porch and gave me a little wave. I slapped my hand over my face.
Why, fate? Why? What did I do?
The shapeshifters froze, momentarily perplexed by the appearance of an indignant old man in their midst. Ascanio blinked. Derek raised his eyebrows. Namtor pointed at the 2 Buddhas standing too close to my house.
You there, get off this land.
One of the Buddhas cackled. Great uncle, I growled. He stabbed his finger at me.
You come over here. It is unseemly. It is beneath you to brawl in the street.
Ascanio shook his head.
Somebody, pick up Grandpa and put him back in the house before he gets hurt.
Nantur's eyes bulged.
Uh-oh,
Martin said.
Insolent worm, the royal assassin hissed. I'll skin you, weakling, and wear shoes made of your mangy pelt.
Derek looked at me.
Interesting relatives you have.
Ascanio pivoted to Namtur. Mangy?
Of all the things he could have taken offense to.
Yes, carrion eater. Slink away. It's what your kind does best.
Ascanio sighed and waved his hand. The female Buddha on his left started toward Namtur. Namtur smiled.
There was no warmth in it.
No killing, I called out. No! Namtur bent his right leg and raised it up, resting his ankle on his left leg, toes flexed out. His left arm came up to his chest, bent at the elbow. His right elbow rested on his left wrist, the forearm pointing straight up, his palm parallel to the ground, fingers pointing at the female Buddha. Python's coil. Well, it could have been worse. The female Buddha covered the last 6 feet and reached for him. Magic struck out of Namtur in a purple cloud filled with the coils of a phantom serpent. It splayed through the street like a blast wave and vanished. Translucent purple chains gripped every shapeshifter, locking them in place. The top ring of the chain clamped their mouths, gagging them. The shapeshifters strained. Muscles bulged. Faces turned red. Nobody moved. Ascanio's eyes burned with murderous fire. If looks could kill, Namtur would have 2 smoking holes in his head.
Oh, Martin said. You could steal all their things.
Namtur smiled at the child.
I told you, there is no thief in this world equal to me.
My life was a circus. A circus full of thieves and stupid shapeshifters and small children executing evasive maneuvers. How long will it last? Martin asked.
Namtur shrugged.
In my day, the people of the fur were valiant and mighty. Great men and terrible beasts. A wonder to behold and a challenge to fight.
He waved his hand. Derek flexed his shoulders. The chains shattered and melted into thin air. Wow, he hadn't even strained.
Namtur's eyes narrowed. Except that one. Go inside, child.
He pulled a long, curved knife out of his robes.
Okay, that was enough.
The words of the old language came naturally, as if I was born to it.
Release them and take the child inside, please.
You will be safe.
I'll call for your aid if I need it.
Ascanio snapped his chains with a guttural snarl. Namtur rolled his eyes, ran up to the porch, swept Martin into his arms, and disappeared into the house. The door clanged shut. The chains vanished. Shapeshifters stumbled, and a couple fell, suddenly free. Ascanio's face was pure rage.
Things just weren't going his way.
He started forward. I moved between him and Derek.
No! Step aside.
The menace in his voice shot alarms through me.
Or what?
Or I'll move you.
Ascanio looked at Derek over my shoulder.
Hiding behind a human?
Derek smiled.
Idiot.
A shiver dashed through Ascanio. He was a hair from shifting.
Well, that was very informative, a familiar voice said. But playtime is over.
I turned my head. Robert Linesco crouched on top of the debris pile blocking the side street. Lean, dark-haired, with eyes like chocolate and bronze skin, Robert looked almost pretty. Until he switched to his warrior form, and then he looked like your worst nightmare. Zahar gaped at him. Apparently, like everyone else, he hadn't heard or smelled Robert, and having him materialize 20 feet away was probably extremely upsetting. That's why Robert was the alpha of the rats and the pack's chief of security. Martin and Namtur popped their heads out the door. Ascanio kept walking toward us. Behind him, the Buddhas started forward. Robert shook his head. 3 dozen shapeshifters rose from nearby roofs.
When I said the party was over, kids, I meant it.
Ascanio halted. His people stopped, too. The wolves moved closer to Derek.
We had an understanding, Ascanio said to Robert.
Our understanding hinged on you being discreet. Robert waved his hand to indicate the scene. This is not discreet. The venerable gentleman was correct. This is unseemly. I'm handling this. My people will clean it up, Ascanio said. No need. This is done. No. Beta Ferrara. Robert's voice turned ice cold. Do you know where Abigail Lewis is? Ascanio glanced at me, as if looking for someone. No, not at the moment. I do. She's being transported to the keep from the safe house on Durham Street. She inhaled a pound of silver dust. She should be dead. Ascanio's face blanched. Instead, she is in stable condition. They were able to wake her up with an adrenaline shot, and she stayed conscious long enough to tell everyone in the safe house that a pretty human knight and a magic werewolf with scars on his face saved her life. The man who dropped her off told them that Derek Gaunt said hi. Doolittle is standing by in the Keep's clinic. He says it's a miracle and can't wait to examine her. All the fight went out of Ascanio. They called it into the Keep. The cat was out of the bag, and now Robert would do things by the book. Robert looked at Derek. You have some choices to make. Are you here as Gaunt, or are you here as Argent? Think carefully before you answer. A brilliant move. Robert had just solved the dilemma of Derek's identity by pushing the burden onto Derek's shoulders. Most of Derek's people were right here with him. If he said he was Gaunt, Robert would let him walk away. If he said he was Argent, he would be given an invitation to the Keep he couldn't refuse. His people would go to the Keep regardless. He had the immunity that belonging to Curran provided. They did not. He wouldn't abandon them. Derek opened his mouth. Greetings to the Alpha of Clan Rat. Thank you for your hospitality. Greetings to the Beta of Ice Fury, Robert replied. Ascanio looked like somebody had slapped him with a fish. The Beast Lord is eager to meet with you, Robert said. Why make him wait any longer? Derek said. Robert smiled. Excellent answer. You were always good at thinking on your feet. He looked to Ascanio. The Beast Lord will see you as well. When the call came into the Keep, the Beast Lord was in a meeting with your Alpha and the Alpha of Clan Wolf. Oh no, Nick told Desandra. The two of them knew about Ascanio and Derek's incident, realized that a confrontation was inevitable, and so Desandra must have positioned herself in the Keep, waiting for Ascanio to fuck up. Robert's face softened. If I were you, I'd use this time to think of answers to some pressing questions, such as why you assigned a Buddha to follow a Knight of the Order without authorization, why you inserted yourself into the investigation of Pastor Haywood's murder, why you failed to report the presence of foreign shapeshifters in the Pack's territory. Most important of all, why you picked a fight with the Beta of the largest shapeshifter pack on the continent. Bear in mind that ignorance won't be an effective defense. Ascanio's expression went blank. Derek's status had set the situation on its ears, and now he was rapidly recalculating. Judging by the look on his face, his brain had to be shifting through the possibilities so fast, I half expected smoke to come out of his ears. Robert turned to me. Our apologies to the Order for any inconvenience. No need. As you said, this is done. Robert nodded and looked at Ascanio and Derek. Gentlemen, shall we? Wait for me, Derek murmured under his breath. I will, I promised. I didn't have a choice. He walked to join Robert. Ascanio did the same. The two groups formed two columns behind their leaders. The rats fanned out around them, and they walked away. In a few breaths, the street lay empty. I sighed and headed into the house. Martin was curled up on the divan, hugging a pillow. I'd covered her with a soft throw, and from my spot at the table, she looked like a little lump. I poured more wine for Namtur. He sipped it from a small cup. The old man loved sangria and, given a chance, drank it like water. But today he was pacing himself. The assassin was expecting a fight. I sipped my tea. Wine and I didn't agree. It made me sad and gave me nightmares. 3 hours had passed since the shapeshifter standoff. 3 hours for the Mavarim to do whatever they wanted. I wanted to pace around like a caged tiger. Instead, I made myself be calm. Sophia showed up at my door minutes after the shapeshifters left. She apologized profusely. I told her that I had Martin and there was no further need to guard her. It wasn't strictly true. Rudolph's death eliminated most of the risk to Martin, but the Mavarim could still come for her to get to me. However, I had thought of a more permanent solution to her safety. Despite my best assurances that she wasn't fired, Sophia seemed crestfallen. According to her, if I ever needed anything done in Atlanta, there would be a teenage were-mongoose on standby. I had her call the Methodist hospital for me because I couldn't get a dial tone. Douglas had survived. He was still in ICU. He would likely live, but they couldn't tell us how much of his mobility or brain function he would regain. I'd thanked Sophia, and she left. Then I'd packed my bag with weapons, so I'd be ready to go the moment Derek showed up. Then I made a big meal, which Namtur and Martin devoured. Then Namtur told her stories of his exploits until finally she fell asleep. Then I poured him wine and made tea. No word from Derek, just waiting. Every minute we delayed ate at me. I felt like a woman trying to run a race with my feet tied together. Smart child, Namtur murmured, looking over Martin. She eats when there is food. She sleeps when she's safe. She's a survivor. I paid some strong shapeshifters to keep an eye on her, but she keeps escaping. Namtur smiled. Then his expression turned serious. That shapeshifter who shrugged off my chains, what is your connection to him? We're working together. He shook his head. Ah, the arrogance of youth. You seek to avoid the question, and you think I won't notice. Tell me about this scarred man. He's someone I used to know.
Ah.
Namtur smiled without showing his teeth.
A person from your childhood?
Sort of. What do you think of him?
I have known many warriors among the people of the fur. Their kind seeks to intimidate. They snarl and flaunt their strength and speed. In this way, they seek to avoid unnecessary combat. It is the way of animals. Make yourself larger, make yourself scarier, puff out your fur and show your teeth.
Namtur took a swallow of his wine.
This man is different. He could have broken my chains at any time, yet he waited to see what I would do. He thinks. He has patience. And that makes him dangerous. If I had to kill him, surprise would be best.
On that we could agree. Fighting Derek one-on-one would be a monumental challenge. The old man nodded.
Were you friends in your old life?
Yes.
Are you friends still?
I don't know, I answered honestly. Many things have changed.
That they have.
Namtur fell silent, his eyes clouded with memories. I finished my cup and still he didn't speak. Why are you here, great uncle? I asked gently. He looked into the distance.
This is the place she chose to die.
When Roland woke up in the new age, he was filled with hope and possibilities. When Era came to, she awoke to despair and pain. Something she cherished most in the world had been torn from her. She saw no point in living. By that point, Roland must have begun to suspect that his daughter was in Atlanta, and he had decided to send Era to the city to draw Kate out. Grandmother had recognized Kate instantly. The two of them looked so alike, nobody could deny the resemblance. They had fought, and Era let Kate kill her. Oh, she'd made Kate work for it. It was one of the hardest fights of Kate's life. But in the end, Grandmother let go and let herself slip into oblivion. Except with our family, nothing was ever that simple.
I wanted to see it for myself. To think that this is the place where she had drowned in despair beyond all hope.
Namtoor let it drop and wiped the moisture from his eyes.
I've known her since she was 15 years old. She was so strong, so full of life, a glittering jewel suffused with light. How could we let her become a listless shadow of herself? How could we have failed her so completely? Her own brother.
He clenched his fist. His voice choked up.
Her own brother. Rage bubbled in his voice. He should have waited patiently by her resting place. He should have built a residence. He should have trained retainers for her. And when she awoke, he should have gently ushered her into this new world. Instead, he sent his servants to fetch her like some freight. Because of him, she thought that precious gift had been lost. He let her think that. And then...
Namtoor's face turned savage. If Namtoor ever got his hands on Roland, my grandfather would die. His great cosmic powers wouldn't matter. I reached out and touched his hand with my fingers to bring him back to reality. What he did was unforgivable. I understand it better than anyone. I've heard his explanations. They rang hollow because I've seen what he has done to my uncle. Of all the people besides Kate and Era, I was closest to my uncle. He understood me in a way nobody else could. We both had stared into the burning void left behind when the binding shattered. We'd both overcome it. We'd both pledged to never be bound again.
It wasn't just Nimrod. Namtoor's face turned dark. We all used her. The entire kingdom stood by as she became the plague maker. She sacrificed herself for us in the worst way possible. We all allowed it. I allowed it.
I laughed. He glanced at me, startled. How brazen of you. My grandmother is the queen of Shinar. Nobody allows her to do anything. She did what she did because she judged it necessary.
There were times when I could have pulled her back. Instead, I urged her on.
Namtoor shook his head.
I will not make the same mistake again. I have aged, but I will not die until I am sure she will not succumb to darkness. She deserves all the happiness.
Era's death must have shaken him to his core. The raw emotion in his voice and the naked regret in his eyes made me want to turn away. I was witnessing his grief. It felt intensely private, and I was intruding. I had to bring him out of it. So, does my grandmother know you love her? He blinked, taken aback.
Of course I love her. We all love her.
I'm not talking about the love of a friend or a loyal subject. Namtoor stared at me for a second, grabbed a newspaper from the desk, squeezed it into a tube, and hit my head with it.
Evil child!
Whop!
Shameful!
Whop!
How do such ideas even enter your mind? Must your mouth speak every stray thought that flitters through your head?
I laughed and leaned out of the way. You protest too much, great uncle.
Your grandmother is my sworn sister.
But not blood sister. Namtoor waved his newspaper.
Not another word.
I held up my hands. I'll stop if you do me a favor.
You dare, after the inanity you blabbered?
He tossed the newspaper onto the table.
What is it?
When you go back to the new kingdom, will you take the child with you?
Namtoor pivoted in his chair and looked at Martin.
She has no future here, I said. She will die in the streets.
You can stop pretending, Namtoor called.
Martin opened one eye.
The princess asks me to take you with me.
Martin opened both eyes. Is she a real princess? Like in fairy tales?
Yes,
Namtur said with great gravity. If you are willing, I will take you with me to her kingdom. It is a land of food and wonders. I will give you food.
Good.
I will give you clothes and teach you to read ancient books.
Also good.
I will make you my apprentice.
Good. Wait, what?
That's not what I asked, I said. Namtur ignored me. Do you understand what that means?
Martin sat up.
There will be no thief in this world equal to me?
Great uncle, let's talk about his... Namtur's eyes shone. Yes, and so much more. It won't be easy. You will weep. You will fail often. And you will want to quit. Your body will have to endure great hardship to grow strong, and your mind will do the same.
I won't fail, Martin said. And I won't cry.
Namtur rose. Come here, child. Martin hopped off the couch and approached. Do you have a name? He asked.
This is a terrible idea, I said. Dira? Nobody calls me that, though.
It's a good name, Namtur said. Kneel. Martin knelt. Namtur reached out and put his hand on her head. Dira of Atlanta, do you accept me as your master? The royal assassin asked.
Think very carefully, I warned. Yes, Dira said. I accept.
Magic punched them, surging from Namtur's hand. In my mind's eye, they glowed with brilliant, intense blue, Namtur darker, close to indigo, and Dira a light cerulean shade. The two blues collided, mixed, and flowed back, binding the old man and the little girl. Well, that hadn't gone the way I wanted. You can get up now.
Thank you, Master.
Dira jumped up.
Why?
Namtur spared me a look. I am old and tired. Yeah, right. Who will take care of you when I'm gone?
She's a little girl.
She named herself Martin after a small vicious killer. She didn't name herself after a meek rabbit. Magic pulsed through me. Someone was at my front door. I dissolved the outer ward. A moment later, Derek walked into the inner chamber. Finally. I grabbed Dakan, my bag, and my bow and quiver. I will raise the Enki shield, I told Namtur. Should the Mavarim arrive, use the tunnel. Everything here can be replaced, except you and Dira. Should they break through, I will bring this place down on their heads. It shall become their tomb. If that happens, the child and I will wait for you where your grandmother gave up her life. Make your kingdom proud.
I will, great uncle.
I'll keep her safe, old man, Derek said. Namtur fixed Derek with his stare. It was cold and dark, and it promised death. Pah! Keep yourself safe, shepherd of the wolves. And if the danger is too great, hide behind her. Dananu Edes Shinar has no need of your puny protection. Derek's eyes shone with gold. He looked like he wanted to say something. The last thing I needed right now was the two of them getting into it.
Let's go.
I marched to the door. Derek followed me. We exited into the hallway, crossed the house, and went out the front door. Six shapeshifters waited by my porch, four men and two women. Zahar I already knew. The rest I had seen on the street when Derek and Ascanio had almost had their idiotic showdown, but aside from that, none of them looked familiar. I turned around and strained. Magic broke free of me, pulsing through the wall of my house and sparking on the tapum, the clay tablets with ancient cuneiform I had affixed around the inner chamber. The Enki shield snapped into being with an audible thrum, and for a second, the translucent dome towered over the house. It faded almost instantly, an invisible, impenetrable barrier.
Cool alarm system, Zahar said. Where can I buy one?
We turned down 17th Street, heading straight into Unicorn Lane. What happened with the Beast Lord? I asked.
The usual, Derek said.
Derek Gaunt, Chatty Cathy.
Could you elaborate?
We have 3 days to conclude our business in the city, Zahar told me. If we overstay our welcome, there will be consequences nobody will like.
If we survived, Derek would leave in 3 days.
Not a lot of time, someone said behind me.
It's enough, Derek said.
We were 100 feet into Unicorn Lane when Derek picked up the beggar's scent, and the nearest lamppost sprouted teeth and claws and tried to eat his face.
17.
The portal measured about 6 feet wide and 10 feet tall. It wavered, its edges ragged and glowing softly, hidden deep inside a ruined parking garage. Inside the portal, a wide plain stretched, awash with green grasses, and in the middle of it, a good couple of miles off, a house rose on a low hill. Around me, the shapeshifters formed a circle, all still human. It had taken us half an hour to get to this spot, and they paid for it with blood. Their flesh wounds knitted closed, but one of the men had a broken arm, and one of the women, a tall redhead, had taken a giant insect pincher to the abdomen. She was breathing in short, shallow gasps. I was pretty sure her intestines were lacerated.
What is this? The other woman asked. Is this an illusion? It doesn't smell like an illusion.
It smelled like the steppe, of grass and wind and water meandering from a hidden stream.
It's the home of the man we're looking for, Derek said. It's his refuge. He always was a coward.
I don't understand, a short male shapeshifter said. If we go through this, where are we going to end up? Is this someplace far away but on this planet?
They looked at me. Apparently, I was the designated tear-in-the-fabric-of-reality expert. I don't know, I told them. It could be. It could also be a naturally occurring pocket of deep magic or a crafted realm, something a powerful being made for themselves.
He isn't that powerful, Derek said. Most likely he found it, and he's squatting there.
Or, I told him, he may have made a deal with whoever crafted it, and the moment we go through it, they'll dump a meteor shower on our heads.
Are we going in? Zahar asked.
I'm going in, I told them. I can better protect myself from magic. I'll tell you if it's safe. They would follow me. The Mavarim hadn't found this hidey hole because the house wasn't on fire, but Derek knew they would be coming. If we could find it, they could too. And leaving shapeshifters by the entrance to face Moloch's priests alone would be stupid.
Single file, Derek said. Once we're through, we may have to run. Nia, how's the stomach?
Could be better, the injured shapeshifter said.
Krish, Derek said to the man next to her. If she slows down, pick her up and carry her.
Krish nodded. The shapeshifters formed a column behind Derek, and I had a vision of a wolf pack padding one after another through the wilderness. I blinked my sensate vision on. A ward surrounded the gap, a narrow column of tense magic. No surprise there. I stepped forward into the magic field. Pressure clamped me, piercing my eyes with painful needles. The spell crunched me, trying to break my defenses. I concentrated, pushing outward. Using a power word would crack it like a hammer hitting a walnut, but I had no idea what the day would bring, and my magic barely had 4 hours to recover.
Do you need help? Derek asked.
No. The ward chewed on me. Thin veins of dim green light formed in the empty air, the spell trying to expel me. I held my magic shield. Defensive wards came in different flavors. Some were walls, barriers you had to break through with sheer force. Some, like this one, were designed to cause pain and squeeze the intruder until they retreated. This wall type had to be shattered. Most people thought that the squeezing type couldn't be broken. Most people were wrong.
What are we waiting for? Someone asked behind me.
Quiet, Derek ordered.
The ward squeezed and squeezed,
the pressure grinding on me. It would keep squeezing until it broke me or ran out of power. Pain was temporary. It would pass like the water of a moving river. The green veins flashed with white. With a sharp clap, the ward crumbled around me, its magic exhausted. The pain vanished. "I just broke his ward. If he didn't know we were here before, he knows now." Derek nodded. I jumped through the gap and landed in the grass. The soft stalks reached just above my knees. Sunshine spilled from an impossibly high sky. The air carried scents of herbs and grass. A bee flew by me. I waited to see if the ground under my feet would open up and swallow me whole. It didn't. 10 seconds. 15. Long enough. I jogged toward the house. Behind me, Derek leaped through the gap. In a few breaths, his wolves overtook me, fanning out in front of me. Nia caught up to me, her face flushed. "Do you need me to slow down?"
"I need you to speed up," she said. "At this rate, I'll be old by the time we get there."
I picked up the pace. We ran through the plain unhindered. We were 150 yards from the house when my sensate vision picked up another ward, a translucent dome of green, sheathing the structure and the hill it sat on. Dense currents of magic swirled on its surface like colors on a soap bubble. This one wouldn't be that easy to break. Letting it chew on me this close to the house would also make me an excellent target. I pulled Dakan out and sliced across my left forearm. A few drops of blood coated the spear's tip. The Shannar wasn't the only family who used blood as a catalyst, so I wouldn't be giving myself away. Ahead of me, Derek halted. The ward should have been invisible to him, so he must have sensed its magic. The two werewolves on his left and right missed their cue and ran headfirst into the spell. Green pulsed from the impacts. I ran past Derek without altering my pace and stabbed Dakan into the ward. My blood sliced through the magic like a knife through warm butter. The ward shattered. I kept running. 100 yards to the house. The grasses in front of me rippled. Derek sprinted. One second he was behind me, the next he picked me up and charged ahead. "What?" Derek leaped. Below us, an emerald green serpent the size of a fire hose reared from the grass.
"I'm sensing a theme here," I told him.
"Mm-hmm. He likes green."
Behind us, wolves howled. Derek ran so fast it felt like we were flying. I wanted out of his arms. Out.
"Should we help?"
"No. They're having fun."
His definition of fun needed some work. He leapt left, right, dashed up the hill in a dizzying sprint, and set me down in front of the enormous double doors. A stone hall rose in front of us, its gray walls thick and towering. Derek pounded his fist on the wood. Below, Derek's wolves, all in warrior forms, attacked the serpents. As I watched, a huge reddish beast jerked a coiling green body into the air and tore it in two.
"I know you're in there," Derek bellowed. "Open these damn doors or I'll break them."
The doors swung open with a soft creak. A man stepped forward. He was perfectly average. Average height, average build, neither pale nor tan, with nondescript features and a bald head. Only his eyes were remarkable, filled with intelligence and slight contempt, as if he were the only genius in a world full of idiots, and he had come to terms with his fate.
"Well," Simon said, "I suppose it had to happen sooner or later."
I sat on an oversized ergonomic couch that curved around a glass coffee table. The glass was thick and cut in a sinuous curve. The base of the table was an S of black steel set on its side. Simon sat on an identical white couch across the coffee table. Derek parked himself behind me with his arms crossed. His crew had taken positions throughout the cavernous stone hall, some by the front doors, some by the two hallways leading deeper into the keep, and a couple by the floor-to-ceiling windows rising to the high ceilings. Above us, a circular chandelier of plain white metal paid homage to its medieval origins. The building was pure castle, with stone walls, an enormous fireplace, and massive beams of aged wood. The furnishings were the epitome of pre-shift, ultra-modern luxury. The duality, that was Simon. Simon studied me. Fascinating bone structure. His face rippled, the bones shifting and reforming, stretching his skin like it was a rubber mask. When shapeshifters changed forms, it was nearly instant. Simon took his time, reshaping and fine-tuning. The whole thing was revolting. I'd seen him do it before, so I knew it was coming, but it still made me want to vomit.
I saw you die, Derek said. I was at your funeral. I watched them close the casket and lower you into the ground. Why aren't you dead?
You don't have to sound so disappointed.
His face was still crawling, and his voice sounded distorted.
Kate mourned for you, Derek continued.
I cannot be responsible for her emotional attachment.
Asshole. He hadn't changed a bit. Derek leaned forward, menace rolling off him in a heavy wave.
You let her think you were dead. She saved you.
And for that, I am eternally grateful. However, I repaid that favor. I settled my debts before my carefully arranged demise. I don't owe anything to anyone.
They should have put that on your tombstone, Derek said.
No, I rather like my steel as it is.
Simon's features finally stopped moving. A close facsimile of me sat on the other couch, wearing my face and Simon's clothes. He took a mirror off the coffee table, checked his reflection, and frowned. It didn't quite match.
Why did you fake your death?
Derek asked.
Because there is a great difference between being renowned and notorious. Prior to Roland's involvement, I was respected for my expertise. I was a businessman.
A businessman who had charged exorbitant fees for his magic expertise and amassed a fortune in currency and magical items. None of it had helped him in the end.
After Roland took an interest in my blood, I became a victim, someone to be pitied and rescued. My credibility plummeted. I have no desire to remain a man who couldn't protect himself, yet I have too many contacts here to pick up and start over. This was a perfect compromise.
Simon was an egotist of the highest order, someone who detested altruism in all its forms. He maintained that friendship was a weakness and love was a delusion, a view that let him justify the utterly selfish way in which he lived his life. The realization that he survived the encounter with my grandfather only because Kate took pity on him was simply too much for him to deal with. Instead of adjusting or altering his philosophy, he had faked his death, run away, and hid here, in this pocket of separate reality. I will see the box now, I said. The fake me tilted her head, trying to mirror my movements. He liked to shock and keep his opponents off balance. Most people would be uneasy when confronted with an exact replica of themselves, but there were things about me he could never duplicate. No matter how much he tried, he would always be a pale imitation.
And who do I have the pleasure of addressing? He asked.
Someone who broke all of your wards.
Touché.
Simon smiled with my lips.
Beauty and power. An attractive combination. Do you have a preference in your partners? A type?
Ugh.
Derek leaned forward, about to jump over the couch, and I put my hand over his forearm. I had to cut Simon off at the knees, or this would degenerate fast. My expression snapped into my hard Denanu mask. Simon shifted, thrown off balance. It wasn't my expression alone. It was the transformation from a normal person to Princess of Shinar. It was in my eyes, in the lines of my body, in the authority written on my face. My voice went cold, suffused with magic.
You forget yourself, Jotun. He tried to match my gaze and squirmed. That's right. I know your true form. I've seen it. I held my stare. Silence filled the room.
You mentioned a box? Simon raised his eyebrows.
Time is short, Jotun.
I have a name, he said pointedly. And I'm a businessman. If, hypothetically, a valued client entrusted me with an item they wanted sold.
I tossed a small bag onto the coffee table. It made a clinking sound as it landed. Simon reached for it, pulled the drawstrings open, and gently shook the contents out onto the table. 5 blood-red rubies as big as my thumbnail clattered onto the glass, each with a 6-rayed pale star shimmering on the surface. Natural stones mined in Burma. Star gemstones took enchantment much better than regular gems. Their magic reserve was significantly larger, and the enchantments lasted longer. Simon stared at the $250,000 on his table. Money was the fastest way to cut through his bullshit, and time was short. I'll see the box now, I repeated. He picked up a ruby, looked at it in the light, set it down, and walked deeper into the house. Derek leaned toward me.
You paid him?
It's faster.
Or I can put his head into my mouth.
That doesn't seem sanitary. Wouldn't you taste their hair? Is that just a thing you do because you get bored in Alaska? Simon returned, carrying a parcel wrapped in purple velvet. He set it on the table with a flourish. I pulled the velvet free. A small box rested within its folds, shaped like a classic treasure chest. It was opaque and bluish white with a cross embossed on its lid. The surface of the box appeared soft, almost ivory-like, but the sheen that played on its walls was distinctly metallic. My heart skipped a beat. I had seen this hybrid of bone and metal before. I passed my hand over the lid. Magic nipped at my fingers. Not human. Metal fed with magically grown animal bone. Derek stared at the box, his face unreadable. Kate's sword looked very similar to this. It was made from her grandmother's bones. Telling him this wasn't carved from one of Kate's relatives would blow my cover. It wasn't made from the bones of my family, but I would recognize the workmanship anywhere. I had to have this box. I reached into my bag, pulled a gold bar out, and set it on the table, raising the stakes to 300 grand. I carried more rubies on me, but there was no reason to give them to Simon. Adding the gold bar indicated that I had appraised the box, decided its worth, and was willing to pay a fair price. Billio was hard-pressed for money. Simon would take it. Simon studied the table.
Triple it. It's not worth that. Then I regretfully decline.
This box has a guardian. The guardian has killed Pastor Haywood and Professor Walton. It would have killed Billio himself if he hadn't found a way to hide from it. Simon shrugged.
My defenses are regenerating as we speak.
I looked at Derek. Is the offer to put his head in your mouth still open?
Always.
Derek's voice told me that he would really enjoy it. Simon rolled his eyes. I leaned forward. I was told you were a smart man. I see the rumors were wrong. I'll explain slowly. Try to follow. You have the magic box. It's guarded by a divine beast. The beast is ancient and tireless. It exists for a single purpose, to punish the thieves of its treasure and restore it to its rightful place. It will find this place. It will shred your pitiful wards like tissue paper, and then it will carve your heart out of your chest. Simon sat up straighter. I pointed at Derek. He doesn't like you. He has 6 shapeshifters with him, and he is now in your house. He wants to kill the guardian of the box. If he takes the box from you, the guardian will come to him. Simon glanced at Derek. Moloch has been reborn in Arizona. He also wants this box, and he has sent his Mavarim into the city. They're currently scouring Atlanta looking for you. Simon startled. He'd heard of the Mavarim, and they had made an impression. I don't have the time to draw you a chart, so just imagine all the intersecting lines and realize where they intersect. Sell the box to me and solve all of your problems. The veneer of arrogance was gone.
How much time do I have?
I think the answer to that question is none,
Zahar said, looking out the window. I got up and went to the window. A thundercloud boiled through the portal, an angry black mass backlit with red. It churned and roiled, and within its depths raged a brilliant white fire. The Mavarim firestorm. My heart sank. This wasn't a single priest. This was much worse. I'd underestimated Moloch, and now everyone with me would pay for it. I had to stop them at any cost. If I let them through, they would incinerate the house and everyone inside. Nobody, not even Derek, would survive that fire. Stay inside, I said, all of you. I headed to the door, digging in my bag just in case. Don't follow me, don't follow me. Derek murmured a few words to the shapeshifters and followed. I turned around and walked backwards, facing him but still moving towards the door. Remember that promise you made? About sitting it out when an elder power shows up?
Sure.
He showed no signs of slowing down. I couldn't let him get into this fight. The fire would be too hot. If he failed to dodge even a single fireball, he'd go up like a candle. I would not allow him to become a pile of ashes. Stay here. He pretended to think it over.
I don't believe I will.
So, the Beta of Ice Fury is a liar?
Yes.
I reached the door. There were 10 feet between us. I had to do this fast. You're shameless. He grinned. It was the kind of smile that promised blood.
Yes, and many other things.
It's not your fight.
I decide which fights are mine.
His gaze caught on my bag. He would never let me get my hand out of it. I yanked my magic to me.
Don't do it,
he snarled, reaching for me.
Arr!
Freeze. The blast of magic tore through the house, freezing the shapeshifters in mid-move. Simon halted, halfway off the couch. In front of me, Derek stopped, standing on the toes of his left foot, reaching for me like an ice skater about to leap. The power word would buy me 5 seconds, more than enough. I stepped outside and pulled the glass apple out. The skin on Derek's face wrinkled. Oh, crap. I threw the apple on the stone floor of the courtyard. It shattered, spilling my blood, primed with magic. A muscle on Derek's shoulder flexed. His body trembled, straining. I punched a stream of power into the blood. It snapped into a hair-thin line, glowing with red, and circled the house. A wall of red shot up. Derek crashed into it at full speed and bounced off. The ward tolled like a giant gong. His human body tore, and the terrifying silver beast spilled out. His eyes were on fire.
Open it.
Not your fight. I turned. The firestorm splayed across the sky. It would be on us in half a minute. The blood ward boomed behind me. I glanced over my shoulder. Derek ripped into the wall of magic. He wouldn't break through. It took an insane amount of power to pierce a blood ward. I pulled a golden sphere out of my bag and hurled it into the air. Of the 6 in my sanctuary, I had taken this one because Grandfather had made it especially for a fight like this. The complex metal filigree unfolded like a flower, sliding and moving into a new shape. A hollow metal wolf the size of a pony landed in front of me, its skin an intricate metal lace held together by ancient spells. Like all of Roland's weapons, beautiful and deadly. The wolf snapped its fangs, and its eyes ignited with a red glow. I dropped my bag and my cloak. The canteen on my belt was filled with vampire blood, just enough for a single set of armor. Making the armor would drain me. Once I put it on, it would protect me from heat until its magic was exhausted. My immunity to fire bought me some protection already,
and I had to endure until the heat became too great. I had to save the armor until the end. I grabbed a handful of arrows from my quiver and stabbed them into my thigh. The pain anchored me. The world turned crystal clear. My blood coated the arrowheads. I shoved them back into the quiver and turned to look at Derek one last time. He looked demonic, all claws and fur, a monster corded with bulging muscle tearing into the wall of magic. Nothing human remained in him. I put my hand against the ward. Goodbye. Claws gouged the other side of the spell, leaving no tears. The ward held. I spun around and jumped on the metal wolf's back. The magic would power it for 20 minutes. It would have to be enough. The wolf charged in a dizzying sprint. Wind tore at my face. The cloud in front of me condensed and flashed with flames. The dense curtain of smoke churned faster. Dozens of red glowing fires ignited within the storm and streaked down. Fireballs rained on the plain, exploding left and right, shooting flames and dirt into the air. The wolf zigzagged like a mad rabbit. Come on, show yourselves. A fireball hit too close on my left. Heat bathed me. We tore through it, sprinting deeper to the center of the storm. I finally saw the pattern within the cloud. 3 churning maelstroms, 3 priests, each generating smoke and fire in a dark spiral. An equilateral triangle, with a Mavir in each corner. Individually, they would be problematic. Together, locked into a battle formation, they became unstoppable. I guided the wolf into a turn and leaned back until my spine hit the metal. The left spiral spun directly above me. I knocked an arrow and fired. The arrow shrieked through the air and vanished into the cloud. A fireball answered. The wolf shied right, twisting like a cat in the air, and it took all of my skill to stay on its back. Missed. Shit. Fire pelted the ground around me, explosions so loud I thought I would go deaf. I leaned forward, hugging the wolf's neck, and we streaked through, scorched by flames, showered with dirt, moving forward on instinct and hope. Keep moving, keep moving. To stop was to die. We dodged another fireball, and suddenly there was an opening to the left, all 3 spirals clearly visible on the side. I leaned to the right and fired, sending a burst of magic with it, the same way my ancestors had done thousands of years ago when horse archers of the Khorgans ruled the steppe. The arrow screeched, its red arrowhead glowing, an ember against the black storm. It pierced the center of the whirlwind. A ghostly scream rang out. The spiral collapsed, revealing a ragged circle of clear sky and the Mavir at its center, my arrow in his chest. The priest arched his back. Fire spilled out of the wound. The arrow shaft ignited and burned to ash in an instant, but the arrow head was still inside him, eating at his body, sapping his power. Soot blinded me. I fired again on pure instinct. The second arrow bit into the Mavir's side. I saw it strike home out of the corner of my eye as the wolf and I raced out of the cloud of ash. Behind us, fireballs drummed the ground, as if a giant was chasing me and pounding the ground with his feet. The firestorm tore in half, the injured Mavir convulsing. A torrent of flame slashed into his side from the left. A second torrent hit him from the right. The other priests had anchored him. The burning cloud melted away. The plain was ash around us. The 3 priests hung high above, connected by ropes of fire. I fired an arrow at the priest on the left. It shrieked through the air and burned to nothing 5 feet from the Mavir. Crap. Moloch's priests twisted themselves in identical strange poses. 3 pillars of fire burst from their feet, smashing into the ground with a deafening thud. I steered the wolf into a wide circle and fired again at the other priest. Once again, the arrow melted into ash. The pillars solidified into ornate metal columns, red and glowing with heat. Each column, about 2.5 feet in diameter, towered 40 feet high. 2 priests in front, 1 behind,
still arranged in a triangle. And what the hell were they doing now? The wolf angled around the pillars, keeping far enough back to tolerate the heat. The arrows weren't cutting it. I'd have to get close. Climbing up one of those pillars would be a bitch. Nothing I had could slice through them. Even blood weapons had their limits. The priests clapped their hands. Fire shot out of them, colliding in the center of the triangle. A deafening thunderclap shook the plains, the sound of a colossal amount of magic released at once. The fiery glow flashed with white and rained down, flowing into a bovine shape. A giant three-headed bull hit the ground. The steppe shuddered. The beast raised his head. 12 feet long, 8 feet tall, and 8 feet wide, with horns the size of sabers, it was flesh that emanated fire. Metal scales shielded its sides, chest, and back, and the heat surging from it warmed them to a dull red. The Bull of Tophet. In Sienna's visions, she saw him rampage through Atlanta, setting the city ablaze. Not today. I emptied the canteen on myself and sliced across my thigh. My blood sparked with magic. The undead blood from the canteen reacted, shooting out in a multitude of streams and arching over my back, weaving itself over my body, forming a flexible cuirass over my chest, pauldrons and vambraces over my arms, cuisses and greaves over my legs, and a helmet over my head. The bull dug a hoof the size of a turkey platter into the ground. Flames swirled along his hide. His six eyes sighted me. He blew fire out of his nostrils and charged. I pushed the wolf into a gallop. It flew over the ground, raising clouds of ash with its paws. The drumbeat of the bull's hooves shook the steppe. Fighting him head-on would be suicide. I had to take out the priests. They were the ones feeding it power. The arrows were out. Trying to climb the pillars would burn through the armor and my fingers. Throwing Dakan was pointless. They were too high. I glanced over my shoulder. The damn thing was gaining. How in the hell could something with that much mass run so fast? That was a lot of mass moving at a great speed. I twisted the wolf into a tight turn, leaning so far out of the saddle my body was parallel to the ground. It skidded, turned, and we sprinted back to the pillars. The bull tore past us, unable to make the turn in time. A bellow of rage tore from the beast. "Chase me, you stupid cow." The bull came around like a barge turning and zeroed in on me, picking up speed. "Faster. Put some of that bovine muscle into it." The bull bellowed again, coming fast. The wind fanned his fire and flames.